The waste lives for those moments beyond teaching when you give away the unexpected beautiful phrase. Unexpected, no one has asked, beautiful, it will never come back. Is being the biopower of the enlightenment truly better than this? Perhaps the biopower of the enlightenment knows this. Perhaps it is just reacting to the objecthood of this labor as it must. But even as it depends on these moles, these refugees, it will call them uncollegial, impractical, naive, unprofessional. And one may be given one last chance to be pragmatic. Why steal when one can have it all, they will ask. But if one hides from this interpolation, neither agrees nor disagrees, but goes with hands full into the underground of the university, into the under commons, this will be regarded as theft, as a criminal act. And it is, at the same time, the only possible act. In that under commons of the university, one can see that it is not a matter of teaching versus research, or even the beyond of teaching versus the individualization of research. To enter the space is to inhabit the ruptural and enraptured disclosure of the commons that fugitive enlightenment enacts, the criminal, matricidal, queer, in the cistern, on the stroll of the stolen life, the life stolen by enlightenment and stolen back, where the commons give refuge, where the refuge gives commons. What the beyond of teaching is really about is not finishing oneself, not passing, not completing. It's about allowing subjectivity to be unlawfully overcome by others, a radical passion and passivity such that one becomes unfit for subjection, because one does not possess the kind of agency that can hold the regulatory forces of subjecthood, and one cannot initiate the auto-interpolative torque that biopower subjection requires and rewards. It is not so much the teaching as it is the prophecy in the organization of the act of teaching, a prophecy that predicts its own organization and has therefore passed as commons, and the prophecy that exceeds its own organization and therefore as yet can only be organized. Against the prophetic organization of the under commons is arrayed its own deadening labor for the university, and beyond that the negligence of professionalization and the professionalization of the critical academic. The under commons is therefore always an unsafe neighborhood. As Frederick Jameson reminds us, the university depends upon, quote, enlightenment-type critiques and demystification of belief and committed ideology in order to clear the ground for obstructed planning and development, unquote. This is the weakness of the university, the lapse in its homeland security. It needs labor power for this, quote, enlightenment-type critique, unquote, but somehow, labor always escapes. The premature subjects of the under commons took the call seriously, or had to be serious about the call. They were not clear about planning, too mystical, too full of belief. And yet this labor force cannot reproduce itself. It must be reproduced. The university works for the day when it will be able to rid itself, like capital in general, of the trouble of labor. It will then be able to reproduce a labor force that understands itself as not only unnecessary, but dangerous to the development of capitalism. Much pedagogy and scholarship is already dedicated in this direction. Students must come to see themselves as the problem, which, counter the complaints of restorationist critics of the university, is precisely what it means to be a customer, to take on the burden of realization and always necessarily be inadequate to it. Later, these students will be able to see themselves properly as obstacles to society, or perhaps, with lifelong learning, students will return having successfully diagnosed themselves as the problem. Still, the dream of an undifferentiated labor that knows itself as superfluous is interrupted precisely by the labor of clearing away the burning roadblocks of ideology. While it is better that this police function be in the hands of the few, it still raises labor as difference, labor as the development of other labor, and therefore labor as a source of wealth. And although the enlightenment-type critique, as we suggest below, informs on, kisses the cheek of, any autonomous development as a result of this difference in labor, there's a break in the wall here, a shallow place in the river, a place to land under the rocks. The university still needs this clandestine labor to prepare this undifferentiated labor force, whose increasing specialization and managerialist tendencies, again, contra the restorationists, represent precisely the successful integration of the division of labor with a universe of exchange that commands restorationist loyalty.